Mark, Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13.
Is that right between Romans 12 and Romans 14?
Sir, you're becoming stunningly intelligent. All right. All right, so let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. There is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Okay? So, one of the things that goes along with Christianity, and if you think back to when Jesus Christ was arrested, and he goes in before Pontius Pilate, and Pilate's telling him, he says, well, don't you know I have power to crucify you? What was Jesus?
Quiet.
Trevor, you paying attention here? Good. I knew you would. All right. So the thing is, he gets Pontius Pilate and he tells him this. He said, you could have no power over me at all, except my Father gave it to you. Okay? So how did Pilate get power over Jesus Christ? The Father gave it to him. The cop pulls you over on 86. Where did he get that power? Really from God. Okay? What if he's abusing that power? Well, he wouldn't be the first. Okay? The point is, if a person has power, they got it from God. That's one of the Christian principles. When the Apostle Paul was writing this, Nero was in charge. So you think, well, you know, we don't have to listen to, you know, bad leaders or whatever else. And let me say this. When you live in the United States of America, you do have more of an obligation in the sense that our very founding documents put the power in the hands of the people. Okay? We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. And it was one of the issues that divided the country during the Civil War. Where did power come from? Where does it generate from? So the thing is, if you are an American citizen, you have a greater obligation to pay attention to things. But keep in mind, through the normal process of American law, through the normal process of how law is administered, people are elected and such, when people are in power, they may be bad people in power, but you're to suffer that. If those people break the Constitution of the United States and they violate it, the Supreme Court says you have no duty whatsoever to listen to them. Not zero. That's the Supreme Court. That was settled in a court case called Edwards versus the state of South Carolina somewhere in the late 1950s. In other words, the police told the demonstrators, you must leave the state house lawn. They refused to leave. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said those police had no authority whatsoever based on their race to make them leave the lawn. Okay? Therefore, they had no obligation whatsoever to have obeyed anything. But let me tell you something. Nobody likes a Barracks or a Philadelphia lawyer, somebody that's always going around and second-guessing and such. You're far better off to obey the law as long as you can. If you don't like the law, go through the processes it takes to change it. If someone gives you a blatantly, and you know it to be an unconstitutional thing to do, then you don't have to. I can certify you, you'll go to jail. Okay? I've spent, as I say, anywhere from 20 to 24 nights in jail over constitutional issues. I can certify you, you will. But it's not the law that's your enemy. Okay? The law is on your side. All right, so it goes on, it says this, verse 2. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. Now, it's not talking about damnation since you're going to go to hell. Oftentimes, when Paul talks about damnation, he's talking about the idea of your conscience. What's going on with you? You're not free. Your liberty isn't there. I want to read you something that Peter had to say, and it's going to be in 2 Peter 2:10 for those of you who are comfortable to follow along. If not, just wait. 2 Peter 2:10. In fact, we'll go to verse 9 just to get some context. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptation, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. Now look at this, verse 10. But chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness, and despise government. Presumptuous are they, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignities. Okay? So, who are the people that God chiefly knows how to set aside for punishment? Though people who just won't let anybody, nobody can tell me what to do. Okay? And if you ever meet somebody who nobody can tell me what to do, if you look at their life, it usually looks like a life that nobody can ever tell them what to do. It's a shambles, it's a wreck, it's a mess, it's all full of pride and everything else. And if there's anything I've ever learned in life, it's that a person who learns to obey and take orders young become great leaders later in life. People who cannot take orders, never could take orders, can never lead. It just doesn't work. If you ever see people like that in authority, it's just usually a mess. They can't do it at all. But, presumptuous are they, self-willed. What kind of person? We're talking about the kind of people that despise government. Now, if you go on the internet, you know, you take Facebook. I've got 500-600 different people that follow me or whatever, and I follow most of them, and most of it, I don't even remember when they sent their friend request. I try, if it's people from third world countries, I try to only take those that I'll go down and do their thing. If they're interested in the same things I am, they're going to be interested in my blog posts, they're going to be interested in the preaching and such, then I'll put them on as a friend, they can follow along with stuff. If it's somebody I knew from my youth, I'll put them on. If it's a relative, I put them on. I turn down all sorts all the time. You know, people, just some cab driver in Manila or something, and you know, you look, he's got nothing in common, he's just trying to gather a bunch of friends, I'm not interested in that. But regardless of that, it's amazing to me all the anti-Trump stuff I get, or pro-Trump stuff I get in that timeline. But I used to get anti-Obama stuff, pro-Obama stuff. Back before there was Facebook, you heard pro-Bush stuff, anti-Bush stuff, pro-Clinton stuff, anti-Clinton stuff. Let me tell you something. You have a right as an American citizen to be critical of the president. I often said I wished Obama would run for a third term so I could vote against him again. But as long as you're in this church, and of course I just violate it, you'll call him President Obama. Okay? Why? Because he's the leader of the free world. He's the president of the United States. You're going to show him some respect. When Hillary Clinton was the senator here, I told people in over, you will call her Senator Clinton. Okay? Back in those days, I forbid you to call her Hillary, because that was a derisive term. It's interesting she chose to run for president of that. I think that was a mistake on her part. I don't think she realized what a derisive term that was to so many people, just using her first name. But the thing is, I forbid people to do that. Why? Because we're Christians. We're supposed to be conservatives. We're not going to go around and mock people that are our leaders, all right? It talks about those who despise government, and they're not afraid to speak evil of dignity. You know what the thing is? If you don't like President Trump, then begin to work politically to get him out of power. If you like President Trump, begin to work politically to keep him in power. Do those things. If you don't like Senator Chuck Schumer, begin to work what it takes to get him out of there. If you like him, begin to do what it takes to keep him in there. Okay? But this idea, you know, Chucky baby and all that kind of stuff over a senator, that's not going to fly. You don't do that. You don't despise those people in power. Show respect. Okay? If ex-President Obama were to come to this church, okay, I think we could say that most people here voted against him. Not everybody. There's people who did vote for him. Okay? But you know what? I would show him every bit of respect that I've been taught from my youth and up, and show him the respect of someone who held that office and carried it, and I would show him all dignity that I could. If you know, Senator Schumer came here. I disagree with him. I don't like him as a senator. But if he came here, we would show him every bit of honor that we possibly could, because he's the senator and he represents us in the Senate. That's just common good sense. It's one of the things missing in America today, having that kind of common good sense. All right. So, go ahead.
I just noticed when you were quoting here in 2 Peter 2 about those who are dislike government, called them ungodly. And it says here in Psalms 1, verse 4, starts telling them about all above it talks about why the people who are godly will grow and they'll be planted by the rivers of water and they'll bring forth fruit and whatnot. But here in 4 it says the ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff that are driven away. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in judgment, because they can't handle judgment either.
No. No, that's right. And it's good. You know, nothing's sadder than when you see people like that then become parents. They've always hated discipline, hated being ruled, hated that kind of stuff. Then they become parents, and they have no idea how to do it. They've always hated authority, everything else. They don't, you know, they're screaming at the kids at one time, being best friends with them another time and such. And it's just an awful state to be in. All right, let's go back to Romans 13. You know, I hadn't been here maybe about 1 year. I was driving through Belmont, and eventually, if you're going to get a ticket anywhere in Allegheny County, you're going to get it in Belmont. All right? You know, it's just that guy just sits there and like a spider waiting for that fly to get in the web there or whatever. And I left Wellsville, and I had a taillight that was out. I was thinking, man, I got this taillight out. I'm going to get pulled over, and I'm driving along. Woo, you know. Get pulled over. You know, I pulled you over. I says, you know, I just lost that taillight. Taillight, you were going 43 through a 30. Oh. but you know. So, you know, the thing is, he walked back to his car, whatever else. He hands me the ticket. And, you know, he starts to be a little apologetic. I said, don't apologize to me. I said, when you put that uniform on tonight, you put your life on the line for my family. And I said, I want to always keep that in mind. He goes, man, I feel bad I wrote you a ticket. and I said, no. You know, I said, I was going 43 and a 30. That's all there is to it, or whatever else. But the whole point is, do you realize that cops don't like to come to churches, they don't like to mingle with normal people and everything else? You know why? Because everybody just sits there and picks on them the whole time. Just constantly pick on them the whole time. And if you just ever listen, ever watch a cop at a party, watch him when he's mingling with somebody else or whatever, and there will always be idiots talking to him and saying things. Okay? They'll just always go on. All right. Then it says this, verse 3, Romans 13, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. I just thought to myself. All right. I just want to make sure my Bluetooth's off, because sometimes when I'm recording with my Bluetooth on, it messes it up. It records through the Bluetooth and it doesn't do as well. So I just want to make sure my recording is going like it should. All right. All right, so back to Romans 13. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. And again, the cops aren't pulling people over that are going 65 miles an hour on 86. All right, they're pulling people over that are going too fast. They're not pulling people over that have good inspection stickers on their cars. They're pulling people over that don't have good inspection stickers. You say, well, they make mistakes. My dad got a ticket, or this happened to so-and-so. That's right. Mistakes get made. Things that go on. All right. Everybody here is allowed to say oops, and from time to time you say oops in something you're doing. All right. But if you're in law enforcement, it affects people. That happens from time to time. Go to a country sometime doesn't have our system, and see what it's like. And it's not a pretty thing at all. So the thing is, just have respect to those that are in power. Have respect to those that have the job of having to do those things. All right, verse 4. Now, talking about, again, those in power, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Now, there's a huge change here between Old Testament and New Testament. We're going to look at those one by one. One of them is this. In the Old Testament, if someone killed your family member, Your job was to go execute that person. Okay? So let's say that, you know, Stephen and Samantha are getting ready to go into their car and somebody drives by and shoots them. Immediately, Sam and Tim need to stop everything and go find that person in the Old Testament and execute them. That's what it says. They were to do it. Let's say that Stephen and Samantha get into the car, someone drives by, a rock flies up, kills Stephen. It's accidental, but they're not sure. You know what that person did in the Old Testament? They ran to a city of refuge. And they went to the judges in the gate and said, I've just killed a man accidentally. Immediately they would hold court and find out. They would want testimony. Did you hate Stephen beforehand? No, I didn't even know who he was. Okay? They would go through and then they would declare, this is manslaughter. This is not murder. And then that person would have to live in the city of refuge until such time as the high priest died. What if the high priest was young and he just took over? You're going to be there a long time. Okay? What if he's on his deathbed? You might be there 10 minutes. But either way, he had to live there until the high priest died, and that city would protect him from the person with the hot blood. Once that high priest died, he's free to go, and the person with the hot blood, it's murder for them to kill that man. Okay? So the thing is, in the New Testament, go ahead.
Was it illegal to kill the person right after the accident happened?
No.
Like,
no, that's no.
Yeah.
And it probably happened. I'm not sure. You know, the point is, if you're that close and you saw it, the hope is that you would judge it righteously. But again, it says it's his responsibility to get to the city of refuge. So I'm sure there were people who were killed before they made it there. Okay. In the New Testament, who bears the sword? It says here, the minister of God, the public servant. So if somebody kills your brother, it's not up to you. The sheriff bears the sword. He's the one that has it.
Is that why Simeon died?
Well, yeah, that's kind of stretching it a little bit, because that really, he wasn't guilty of murder or anything there. That was a special, but it's similar in that sense. He was told, stay in Jerusalem, don't leave. Okay, and he did leave, but it's similar to that, what Shimei did. Alright, so the idea comes again. In New Testament thinking, the government bears the sword to punish evildoers. Individuals do not do that. Here's your verse right there that says that. It is a clear change from Old Testament law. You know, some years ago I was involved in a lawsuit, and I went to my pastor and told him, I said, it bothers me that we're suing this person. And I said, it just seems like it's an unchristian thing to sue him. And he said, A, in the Bible, you're not to sue your brother. If it's a member of your church, another Christian, you don't sue them. But he said, you know what a lawsuit really is? It's you taking a person to a judge and asking the judge to judge in between the two of you. He said, you go to a country sometime that doesn't have those lawsuits. You know what they do? They pick up guns and settle it. They pick up swords and settle it. They burn each other's houses. He said, one of the things that keeps this country civil is that we take it to a court of law. Your Honor, this person here ran my dog over. They threatened to do it. They ran my dog over. I paid $900 for that puppy and $300 to get it trained. And, you know, and then the testimony's taken. Yes, he really did threaten to run the dog over. All right? Yes, he was unjustified to do it. Yes, people saw him looking at the dog and speeding up. What's the judge rule? You owe him $900 for the dog, $300 for the training, $500 for the pain you inflicted. Okay? So the thing is, what just happened there? You just kept two people from burning each other's houses down, shooting at each other. So again, as ugly as we look at the lawsuit system, and we all know that there's abuses of it. Every system has abuses. But that lawsuit system in this country has kept us and made us a far more civil country. Far better country. All right. So verse 4 again, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. You know, when the fire inspector comes here to look at the church. I've known pastors, well, we're a separation of church and state. We're not letting a fire inspector in. I'll bet you'd let them in if your church is on fire. I'll bet you'd have them in here in a heartbeat if your church is on fire. You expect them to come in here and risk their lives and to save your church, but you won't let them come in here and see if it's safe in the first place? Okay, are you an idiot? All right?
I think if the church was on fire, would there be any point for a fire inspector to come in?
No, but we want the fire department to come in. We want those people in charge of policing fire and safety in this country. We want them to look at it. Okay? The whole point is have a brain. All right? These people that are in charge, we may not like it. We may not like the idea that there's a dog catcher. We may not like the idea that there's a game ward. We may not like that.
Oh, I just want the dog catcher to catch the dog.
Yeah. But regardless of that, if you don't like it, this is a country where you can do something about it. And sometimes people have. You know, in the state of Alaska, they actually send everybody in the state money every year because the government owns most of the oil in Alaska. And so oil companies come and they drill, and the government actually mails checks. At one time it was $7,000 a year to every single person who lives in the state. Okay? And they would mail that out. They just divided it equally, all the oil money, and mailed it out to everybody in the state. You say, wow, that's a great thing. Well, in the state of Alaska, the Republican Party ran the state of Alaska. They had the power there. And what was happening there is legislators were in the pocket of the oil companies. So a guy would spend maybe 20 years in the legislature. Everything he did would be paid for by the legislature, his campaigns and everything else. And then when he retired from the legislature, he'd get a job at $500,000 a year sitting somewhere smoking cigars, pushing pieces of paper around on a desk. That was his reward. Basically, the oil companies ruled the state of Alaska. And a housewife in Wasilla, Alaska, got sick of that and said, it's time to stop that. What was her name? Sarah Palin. And first she ran for the mayor of that town, and she got there. And then she ran for the governor of Alaska and said, we'll put an end to this. And so from a housewife, within 5 years, she broke the power of the oil companies in the state of Alaska, okay? And everybody wondered, well, what experience did she have? Made a mockery of her. But there's an example of someone. That's why, for example, the woman in charge of NOW, the big feminist organization in San Francisco, endorsed her for vice president. She said, what better example do you want of a woman who achieved power on her own and did great things? But of course, the national press mocked her and made her sound like an idiot and everything else. Whereas in actuality, she was one of the greatest common citizens that had ever been raised up and done a great thing. So the point is, you can sit around and be angry over what the government does or whatever, or maybe you can get off your butt and do something about it like Sarah Palin did. And the sad part is the oil companies have taken Alaska back over again. Once the liberals and everybody made the mockery and such that they did out of her and broke her power and everything, it basically allowed the oil companies to come back in and take back over and suddenly do it. But for a while, she had them on the run. All right. So the thing is, let's go to verse 5. Wherefore, we must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. For the Apostle Paul gives you two reasons to be subject to your government you're living under. Number one, wrath. Why? Because they'll come down on you. Okay? I'm going to pay the speed limit. Well, pay the fines, all right? And hello, Miss Amy. We're recording it here, so you're fine with that. How'd the jail go?
It was good.
Good. But you pay the fines or whatever, so be subject for that, but he should also be subject for your conscience sake. What if you're somebody who is getting away with something? What if you're somebody who is managing to keep something off your income taxes? Maybe you are managing to get away with something or whatever. The Apostle Paul says, let your conscience work. Okay? I've never met anybody who obeys the law 100% of the time. I've met people who brag they do. If you watch them long enough, you'll catch them in hypocrisy. Okay? I try to do it. Every once in a while, I catch myself doing goofy little stuff that I shouldn't do. All right? But I try not to do that. Why? For conscience sake. I want my conscience to be clean on that kind of thing. Verse 6. For this cause pay tribute also, for they are God's ministers attending continually upon this very thing. So he's saying pay tribute. Well, that's two things. Tribute in the sense of the taxes you owe. Tribute in the sense of the honor you owe to that person. Okay? Alright. Verse 7. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. So if you see somebody and they do any of those things, give them that due. Don't hold it back. Don't sit there and be some prideful person. Don't be that way. If you're in England, honor the Queen. If you're in Canada, honor the Prime Minister. If you're here, honor the President. Say, well, I don't like that particular Queen, President, Prime Minister. Do it anyway, okay? Show some honor. Show some old-fashioned stuff. You know, one of the great lessons I had as a kid was when my sister was in the, I think, the seventh grade. And so we're probably dealing maybe 1962, 63. And her history teacher sent her home with what at the time was called mimeographs. Jim, you remember mimeograph papers. People wouldn't remember those today, but it was a crude way of duplicating something. And you had to use static electricity in this machine. You know, went around, had a distinct smell to it. And it almost looked like carbon paper, you know, thing when it was done and such when you got it. But he'd handwritten an assignment, mimeographed it all, which was poor quality, and sent it home for my sister to do it. And my sister walks up to my dad and said, Dad, I can't read this word here. Well, my father looked at it and stood up with a roar. He was so angry he couldn't see straight. The handwriting was bad. Words were misspelled. And he was furious that my sister came home with a paper like that. And he absolutely, he's walking around in a wrath. He sat down and wrote a note, why no daughter of mine will ever do an assignment like this. And about 5 minutes later, he called my sister and he said, Melinda, we're going to do this assignment. And they sat down together and they figured it out. And she asked him, she said, Dad, why? He said, no child of mine will ever go into a school holding something over a teacher. No child of mine is ever going to do that. And he said, yes, I was angry over it, but no child of mine is going to walk into that school, ha, 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 my dad thinks you're bad. And he just said, you'll forget it, here's the assignment, and this is it. I never forgot that. That was a tremendous lesson. The sad part is nobody thinks that way today anymore. And that's why we've raised up a generation of people who despise government. They hate it. All right. Now it says in verse 8, owe no man anything but to love one another. Now, how far do you want to take that? I know people that preach that about debt. To be honest, it wouldn't hurt you to do that with debt. Owe no man anything but to love one another. Okay? In other words, do your best not to put yourself in a position where you're beholden to other people. Okay? If you can get by on your own, and if you can get by and do it without that, do it. Okay?
I know my mother taught me that. That's why I don't have a credit card.
All right, very good. All right. So owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. Why? Because what Jesus Christ say? What's the greatest commandment? Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love thy neighbor as thyself, for in this hangeth all the law and the prophets. So if you did love your neighbor like you loved yourself, first of all, you're not going to be able to do that without God. Okay? So he says, well, I love my neighbors myself. Really? Did you buy him a new car when you got one? You know? But the point is, don't get yourself in situations where you're beholding to people or anything of that sort, but you'll always owe to love each person you meet. You can't get out of that. That's just something you have. I go back to this thing again, and I'll say it a lot. If you think that you're better than other people, the whole world knows you're a hypocrite. If you think you're just as equal as everybody else, you're no better than a communist. But if you can look at each person and esteem them better than yourself, if I can look at Tanya and think, you know, there's things that Tanya can do, I can't, okay? my cook. All right? But if you realize that and look at people that way, that's the Christian way of looking at it. How many times have you heard me say that one of the greatest people I ever met in life was Woody Stevenson? Woodrow Norwood Stevenson. Woodrow Norwood Stevenson was his name. Okay, everybody called him Woody. And the thing is, his mother was a Seminole Indian, and if she ever spent a day sober in her life, nobody ever saw her. His father was a Cherokee Indian who spent it in and out of jail. He got raised by his grandmother in rural South Carolina. All of his uncles, who he was raised with like brothers, were in and out of jail all the time. Woody got a job working in the awning industry where I worked, and never... It was just amazing how ignorant he really was of the world. But you know what? He came into work every single day, worked hard every day, paid his bills. He had a car that was mostly made of Bondo, holding it together and such. Bondo, things that you fix cars with. It's like glue. It's like holding it together with duct tape, all right? So the thing is, he got a car like that. And he had a girl that he'd gotten pregnant with two different children who wouldn't marry him, but he bought her a mobile home. He kept it up. The state never came after him for child support because he always gave it to her before the state could ever come there, more than they would ever demand. Took care of her and such. And I remember looking at him one day and thinking to myself, how many people do I know who could have been born into his family could do what he's doing? How many people I know who could have been born into that ragtag, vile little family of drunks and criminals and everything else could stand there and stay sober and be working like that and pay their bills, and everybody mocked Woody, and you know, and sometimes he'd say really stupid stuff, all right, and such. And, you know, you'd kind of laugh at him. Like, I remember one time we drove a truck full of aluminum scrap up onto the scales, which you do. You weigh it with the aluminum on it, then you throw all the aluminum out, you weigh the truck again to find out how much aluminum. Well, some of the aluminum was hanging over the sides, and he was meticulously putting it all in because he didn't think the scale would weigh it if it was hanging over the side. Alright? And again, yeah, that's kind of dumb, alright? And everybody mocked him and laughed at him for that or whatever, but I just used to think, you get raised by a grandmother raising her sons as drunks and bums and everything else. You go ahead and have both your parents drunk all the time and everything else. You go ahead and be raised without a stitch of education or anything else. You go ahead and be put in that. See if you could pay your bills every day. See if you could go to work every day. See if you could go ahead and do this. And I always admired Woody as a great man. And I think many a man that works on Wall Street could have never made it if he'd been born into Woody's situation. Could have never in a million years attained what Woody attained. And that's why it says, you esteem each man better than yourself. Look for that thing in each person. All right. Now it goes on, it says this. Verse 9, for this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended this same, namely, love thy neighbor as thyself. If you love your neighbor as yourself, you're not going to covet his goods. If you love your neighbor as yourself, you're not going to murder him. You're not going to steal from him. You're not going to take his wife. You're not going to do any of those things. You could get all of them in one bucket, loving that person as yourself. All the other laws would fall into place. Verse 10, love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Simple. That's why it says in 1 John, he that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. It's one of those things, one of the first proofs of salvation is a love that doesn't make sense. Okay? Ability to love people you couldn't love before. Verse 11, and that now knowing the time, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep. For now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. Now what's he calling salvation there? He's already talking about we believe. So what's he calling our salvation there?
Is it?
Well, okay, yeah, he's telling you to love one another, being rescued from something, but what's the rescue? He's really talking about the rapture. Now is our salvation nearer than when we believe. October 25th, 2 years ago, when you believed, rapture's closer now. Now is our salvation closer than when we believed, okay? Now he goes on and he says, verse 11 again, and that knowing the time, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believe. This is why, again, the term the Great Awakening and the Little Great Awakening, both of those, people often think that term deals with all these people getting saved. And it doesn't. It deals with people awakening to their lost condition, awakening to the trouble they have. You know the problem in America today? No one's awake to their condition. Okay. Ruth Ann and I called Betsy Cassiola the other day. We just wanted to talk to her, so I did one of these things where I called my wife, and then we did a third party call, and you know, both on the line with her and such. Did you get my text about? That's fine. Timing, it's everything. But the thing is, we gave her a call. We just wanted to talk to her. And she just talked about this thing of coming to Youth Week 3 years ago and being very troubled over this thing with salvation, but managing to go home and put it all off. Quiet all those fears. Then coming back the second year and again troubled over this thing with salvation, but managing to put it all off, convince herself again that that was nothing. And then Dale going there the Sunday before a youth week, and he preached on feigned, what the word feigned means, and how feigned is when you're faking something and going through it. And she said the bottom just dropped out from under her. And she sat into youth week Monday and Tuesday night, morning and night, Tuesday morning and night, Wednesday in the morning, Thursday morning, came again. All right? And again, she could not stop the agony, all right? She had been awakened. She had been awakened to her condition. She didn't get saved by being awakened to her condition. She got saved later by receiving Jesus Christ. But what made her seek that being awakened? Realize, oh my goodness, I have a problem here. So when you see that term awakened, especially when it's dealing with great awakening, things of that sort, it's talking about making people aware of what the problem is. Alright. Verse 12. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Now, what are we talking about where the night is far spent? We'd have to go back to 1st and 2nd Thessalonians where Paul talks that we are of the day, but we walk in the night. Why? What's the day? Jesus Christ, the Son of Righteousness, he's called in the book of Malachi. S-O-N, Son of Righteousness, okay? He talked about we walk in the daytime. This is what we walk in. When Jesus Christ was there, it's called the daytime. So when you have salvation, you have the daytime. You have that thing the Lord gives. But you're walking in the night. So he says, those of us who are of the day, walk in the day. Those of the night, walk in the night. Okay? But you're not to walk that way. You're to walk as someone who can see. You do have the light. You know where you're going, but you're walking in the night. Alright. So verse 12 again. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light.
Mindset where you're actually walking bearing with all that in mind. Sometimes you go and you're doing stuff and it just seems to slip. You know, it doesn't.
And I don't care who you are, it slips. Okay? I don't care who you are. But you'll learn some things. The renewing of your mind. Where's that come from?
Reading
Bible. So, you know, you're going through that struggle now of trying to remind yourself to do that every day, okay? You raise little boys, okay? You expect them to get up, brush their teeth every day, wash their face, take a shower, all this kind of stuff. Do they do it automatically? No, okay? Right. You go to you do the wash, and you count one pair of underwear for each boy for the last week or whatever. And you get them up there. Oh, yeah, I changed my name. Well, where are the rest? I don't know, Don't know what happened. Yeah, but that's just the kind of thing that goes on. So what do you have to do? You have to train them to do these things. And then when you think they're trained, you get that big disappointment when you realize, no. You start watching. They weren't. But it's the same thing. When a person gets saved, they have to be trained to read in that Bible every day. Okay? Why? Because that's where the renewing of the mind comes. What happens if you don't renew the mind? Then the old mind just begins to take over slowly. The old way of thinking begins to take over. What's the other thing? The Apostle Paul said, speak to yourself in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, making sweet melody in your heart unto the Lord. What kind of music playing in the background? What is drumming in the background all the time? Okay? And does it good to memorize Scripture? Okay? Memorize some Scripture. Get it there so that can play in your heart and such. Have that stuff going. The Apostle Paul said, whatsoever is good and lovely, and he goes through that long list, think on these things, okay? Go through that. What kind of things should you be meditating on? What if you find yourself sitting around depressed because you remember the time your dad lied to you, or your mom did this, or you remember a time this person did this? Get your mind off of that. There's no reason to be sitting there dwelling on that junk, all right? Think on these things, the Apostle Paul said. Find the good things to dwell on. Get your mind concentrated on that stuff. And you'll find it far less that you catch yourself in the muddle. Okay? And when you do catch yourself in the muddle, you'll find it far easier to get out of it. Alright? Mm-hmm. Alright. Alright, very good. So there you go. That Ron Williams Proverbs thing is just awesome. Alright. Then he says in verse 30, let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness. Okay? And again, what's rioting? Are you just, rambunctious and doing things? And, some of you, probably in the last week, have had a riot of one, where you're just pitching a fit, you're angry, you're kicking stuff around, you want everybody to know you're mad, alright? So you're throwing things around or whatever else, and... And let me just say, from one idiot to another, you're an idiot. All right? And, yes. All right? And, there is no excuse for that. Yeah. Well, again, there's no excuse for that. Why we do that? It's a pity party. We want everybody to pity us. And you know what? Once in a blue moon, maybe. But, people that do it all the time just become a mockery. Doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean a thing. I heard a preacher one time, he said he was sitting in a barber shop and everybody was talking. He said, then the air conditioner came on and the fan had a squeak to it. He said, driving him nuts. He said to the barber, how do you take it? Oh, I hear it all the time. You don't pay attention to it anymore. And he said, you know what? He said, that's what some of you become in your home. You just sit there and gripe and complain all the time and nobody even hears it anymore. It's just going on. It's just, they just zone out. They don't have a clue what you're even talking about anymore. And you know what? Get over that. Quit having pity parties for yourself and everything else. When you go to say something, make sure it's said properly, it's said right, and hold their feet to the fire for what you said. If you're not going to hold their feet to the fire, then don't say it. Okay? Never give a command that you cannot enforce. Never give a command that you cannot enforce. Okay? If you do, people just learn to break your commands. Don't do that. Don't give commands you can't enforce. Only give commands that you can enforce, and then make sure that you enforce them properly, and that you do it without rage, without anger, just like it needs to be handled. You can train an animal far more quickly without wrath than you can with wrath.
Well, the pearls talk about how one guy was would lend out his horses, but he told them, "Don't you yell at my horses." Same reason, because they won't listen.
That's right. She's talking about the book to train up a child, and basically they're saying you train a child like you train an animal. Whoa, that sounds terrible. No, how do you train an animal? Teach him what a command means. Okay, the guy would lend his horse out to somebody, and he said, "Don't yell at my horses." Left means go left. My horse, if you say go left, my horse will turn left. If it doesn't turn left, it's because my horse did not understand you. You did not say it clearly in such a way as you could hear it. Okay? You stop, make sure the horse can hear, say go left, my horse will go left. When my horse hears stop, it will stop. Okay? If you're yelling at my horse and hitting it, it's because you're incompetent. You don't know how to make that horse do things. And you know what? Michael Pearl just said, that's really the way to raise up children. With this idea that a child should know what he's to do. If you have to scream at your child about what are you supposed to be doing all this, you've lost it, okay? You might have to walk up, grab him by the arm and say, what are you supposed to be doing right now? Okay? If they don't know, they don't deserve punishment. If you have to tell a child why they're being punished, chances are they don't deserve the punishment. That's why so often with a child, you state to that child what it's supposed to do. Then get feedback from that child. What did I just tell you to do? A lot of times that feedback will come back garbage. It's not what you said. It's what they thought you said. So you go over it again. Make sure you're both communicating. What are you supposed to be doing? That's right. I'm going to go in the other room. I want you to finish your food. When you're done, I want you to rinse your plate off. I want you to set it there by the counter. And I want you to go sit in that room and wait for me to come back. Okay? So now, everybody understands. You walk out, one of the children rinsed his plate off, stuck it by the sink, sitting in that room. The other one, the plate's still on the table, and he's running around in the bedroom. Okay? Did he understand? Yes, he clearly understood. You don't even have to yell at him. You just walk in calmly, grab him by the arm, you wail that tail, and you know, and send them back and go do what they're supposed to do. You don't even have to say much. And you know what? When children get used to that kind of thing, they really become obedient children. What children love is the confusion. Okay? Why? Because in the confusion, they're equal to you. Everybody's screaming and crying and miserable, and now everyone's equal in the house. The adults are acting like children, the children are acting like maniacs, and everybody's equal. Every once in a while, you'll hear where the number one football team loses to some little unknown team. Okay? Alabama will be ranked in the top five this, you know, when it comes out again in the fall. They'll be ranked in the top five. And one of the first things they'll do is they'll play a little thing like Troy State that's got, you know, three girls they use as cheerleaders and, you know, they try to put 12 guys or 11 guys on the field or something. Why do they put them there? Because they want to just, you know, they want a little publicity. They want an easy team to play for homecoming or whatever. And they, you know, they're going to put their star quarterback in for about three plays and get some pictures of him throwing the ball 100 yards down the field or whatever. You know what Troy State wants? They want that day to be blustery wind, sleet, mud all over the field. You know why? Because now my quarterback can throw the ball just as far as yours can. Okay? The wind's blowing. You know what? My little linebacker here that's only 120 pounds and yours is 300, neither one of us can get a grip in the mud. All right? You're both falling on your face. That running back you have that can deke and turn in a second, he can't do it in the mud, can he? You know? He can't at all. That cheerleader we're using as a substitute for a running back, she can do just as well, all right? And they get out there, and when you hear about these big football teams losing, those are the conditions they often lose in. Why? It was the great equalizer. So a parent walks into the room, and he's angry with the child. You know what the child does? Bring the great equalizer and turn to screaming, yelling, crying and screaming and carrying on. Well, it's a great equalizer. Okay? We're all idiots now. We're all completely out of our mind. And the child's equal to the parents. And everyone's miserable. But you know what? The child can live with that. He's been living with misery a real long time. He can live with that. You know? And a lot of times, well, just do what you want. Slam the door and walk out and everybody's angry and such. You know what? You've got to take the great equalizer away from kids. You keep it absolutely calm. Keep it absolutely the way it's supposed to be. Okay? You walk in there. Did you do what you were supposed to do? Oh, your plate isn't by the sink. Oh, you're not sitting in here, are you? Okay? Did you make sure they understood that? Yes, you did. Okay? And you know what? When you're first implementing that with children, it's going to be hard for them because they're not used to it. Okay? And you have to almost set them up to fail. What do I mean by that? You take Caleb and say, now Caleb, here's the rest of your food. You eat the rest of this. When you're done, you take that bowl and set it there. Then I want you to come in and tell me you're done and we'll go brush your teeth. Then you step around the corner knowing full well that Caleb is not going to do that. He never has, all right? So you step in and just catch him at it. And without a lot of ceremony, just a little whack on the butt, set him back down, kiss on the head, you know, and go in there and tell him this is the way to do it. You might spend a couple days doing that. But it'll be the best couple days that kid's ever had. Okay? You've given him the greatest break you ever gonna. You're teaching him to rule his own spirit. You're teaching him to be in charge. You're teaching him to do things he didn't want to do. You know, nothing sadder than an adult who gets to adulthood who cannot make themselves do things they don't want to do. There's nothing more sad than that. Not able to do that. And you have that chance to do that with children, to teach them to do things they don't want to do. And to teach them to do it in such a way, and with reward system and such, it's something you have the ability to do, if you're willing. All right. So let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering. Now chambering, some of you saw where Paul Scott recently wrote about that. What is chambering? Chambering comes from the old Roman idea. They talk about the seven deadly sins, lust and adultery and drunkenness and that kind of thing. They used to actually have parties where every room had a different sin going on in it. You want sodomy, it's going on in this room over here. Okay? You want adultery, it's going on over here. You want drunkenness, it's going on in this room. You want opium, it's going on in this room. Okay? And there were chambers, and you'd go from one to another, whatever sin you wanted. The Roman parties were taking care of it. So Paul says, not in chambering. You know what that mean? Going from one sin to another. Don't spend your time that way. All right. He said, and wantonness. Wantonness is where you just give yourself over to whatever. Not in strife and envying. Okay? Do your best to be without strife. There's so many things that don't need to be full of strife. You know, strife comes naturally anyway. Do your best not to be the one who caused the strife to happen. And envying. Verse 4, what's that?
I think Pastor Haynes covered that so well last night.
He did. Pastor Haynes covered that very well last night. But put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Now what's that mean? Okay. Well, for example, if you're trying to give up a certain kind of food, then don't fill your cupboard with that kind of food. All right? You don't make provision for the flesh. You know, if there's something that you have a weakness for, don't set up where you can do it. Okay? Don't sit there and give yourself chances to do that kind of thing. Yeah, don't buy a lot of bags of chips. Don't send all these cookies next to your pastor. Right? But you know, it's just that common sense. Of not putting yourself in that position. You know, I just remember a joke one time when I was a kid. It was in some magazine, but it showed this cop and this man. They're yelling at a woman. And basically they're telling her, well, you kept complaining about all these obscene phone calls. Now we found out you're paying collect charges on them. Yeah. And then complain about the obscene phone calls. In other words, if there's certain things that you stumble over and that cause you to trouble, don't make provision for that, okay? If I found myself tempted to drink too much, I'm not going to sit in the bar, all right? Why? Because it's a temptation to me. I can't handle that temptation. I don't want it around. I don't want it anywhere near me. If I'm trying to give up cigarette smoking, I'm not going to carry cigarettes around in my top pocket, all right? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put it in my budget. Why? Because I'm tempted to fall anyway. So don't make provision for the flesh. Don't sit there and put yourself in situations where you're the one who greased the skids for that thing to happen. Then he says, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ. Okay? So what's that talking about? Well, if you're saved, you have two natures. You have the old nature, you have the new nature. Put on that new nature. Put on those things of Jesus Christ. You know, earlier he said, put on the armor of light. What is that? That's the same armor as Ephesians 6. It's the armor of righteousness. If you go back, you'll see those are all things that Jesus Christ had. Go back in Isaiah and such. It'll talk about him. And he took salvation unto himself. And, you know, and he himself took on righteousness as a breastplate. And those are all things that are him. And you're to take each of those things and shod your feet and put that shield of faith and have that helmet of salvation. And you'll find each one of those are his characteristics. Put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ. put that stuff into your life. We sang that over at Cassiola's on Sunday. Put on the gospel armor, each piece put on with prayer. And, you know, take some time and go look at it and say to the Lord, would you put that on me today? Would you see to it that that's there where it ought to be? All right. You know what? We're going to end right with that. And let's go ahead and, Peter, would you close us in prayer?
Lord, thank you for me tonight and your word. Thank you for showing us up all the way tonight. Thank you for...